You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
War, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a Next Generation podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is The Enemy. I'm Colin from Warwickshire in England.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Colin again, huh?
I know, you can't get rid of me.
You're like a wart, man. I've frozen you so many times.
Yeah, well, I'm like them nanobots that Wesley, you know, I just keep evolving.
Okay.
You just have to find me my own planet.
Excellent. So how you been?
I've been good. Been very busy. Because it's that time of year. Summer always seems busy. But yeah, I've got a few days off next week, so I'm looking forward to them.
Sweet.
We're going to go to Shakespeare Land.
Okay.
Otherwise known as Stratford-on-Avon.
Ooh. So... Well, I guess you could say I'm 252 pounds lighter.
Wow. Go well, you.
Actually, no. What that means is I just renewed my license plate, and so that's why it said 252 pounds. See, I fooled you. But wow. I'm 200.
How often do you have to do that then?
Yearly.
Oh, it's like our MOT.
Yeah? You guys have the same thing? Except for, you know, I always notice that the English license plates are really really short and really long. So, I mean, you can put a, you know, a book on there, whereas we get the compacted one. I'm trying to figure out seven letters or numbers to make up my own. It's called a specialty plate or prestige plate. But I'm trying to think of seven letters. Or, you know, I don't know what to... I've been trying to figure out a way to put Battle Bridge in seven letters and then put it like something like .com, you know. So I'd have to buy that domain of whatever the seven letters is and forward it to battlebridge.com. But I can't figure out how to put Battle Bridge in seven letters.
Yeah, because bb.com wouldn't work, would it?
No. No, it's got to be anything with three letters you'll never get. I mean, three letters, all taken. But like a BTL... BRDG, maybe. BTLBRDG, maybe. Battle Bridge. And then when they see it, the .com to the right of it, they might get curious and check out battlebridge.com. So,
anyway. I'm surprised you're doing this. I would have just had something like Lose the Man or something.
Lou, yeah, but see, that's three. That's nine letters.
Lou the Man. D-L-O-U-D-M-A-N. Seven letters.
Why don't you just have Lou Trek and then put a link, and then because obviously there's a link on Lou Trek to the Battle Bridge.
Right, because I could imagine if I went to loutrek.com, that's probably available.
Yeah.
And as I say that, I'm going to have to make sure I do that before the show goes out.
Yeah, because someone will buy it.
Hijack my name.
Yeah.
Okay, well then...
No, I'm afraid Lou Trek, they sell raincoats.
You serious? You tried it?
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you want to change the way you spell your name.
Lou Trek. Oh, designer raincoats made by Lou Trek. Nice. Okay. Anyway, I do want to make a quick announcement. Colin and I want to make a quick announcement that Colin doesn't even know we were going to make. But somebody here is celebrating a birthday here soon, within a day or so, as if we're recording. Doc, do you know who that is?
Oh, this is me. It's at least me.
Yeah, and he's going to play with his wand tomorrow.
He's going to do what?
Play with his wand.
play with his wand.
Yeah, I'm off to the Harry Potter experience.
Oh, that explains it more.
It does help reassure listeners. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, last week,
not the one that jumped into Lou's head.
Yeah. No. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Because last week, for last week's show, as I was editing it, I've forgotten all about when Doc used the words "blow me," and I'm like, "Oh, this is too fun." So I actually reverbed it and echoed it. and nobody's commented on it. That's a funny part. That's not words you'd ever expect a doc to say. But it was too good. Okay, let's see.
It's a ringtone.
That's a great idea. Blow me. Blow. Yeah. Anyway, there you go, Colin. If you want to continue on.
Yeah. Happy birthday for tomorrow anyway, Doc.
Yeah, happy birthday from everyone at Trekmate. You know they all love you, so.
Yeah. So.
Okay, yeah. Some. I know a couple that don't like me anymore, but that's, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. I'm going to ask that
as
off.
As Khan Noonien Singh once said, we are all one big happy fleet.
Yeah, that is so true. That is so true. Okay.
Right. Anyway, Star Trek, not Harry Potter. Mm. So the synopsis for tonight's show is LaForge and a Romulan are trapped on a planet ravaged by electromagnetic storms. Worf turns out to be the only viable donor to save the life of an injured Romulan aboard the Enterprise. This is the 7th episode of Season 3 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is November the 6th, 1989. It's written by David Kemper and Michael Piller and directed by David Carson. Where's my guess, Lou?
Oh, keep reading down. They're there.
Oh, there. I'll put my glasses back on. Guess include John Snyder as Bokra and Andreas Kasulis as Tomalak. And I know I've said that wrong because I say it wrong when I do Babylon 5 as well. Mm. Colin Meaney as Miles O'Brien and Steve Rankin as Patak.
That's what I thought it said.
Yeah. It's better if you say Patak because that's a Klingon abuse word.
Mm-hmm.
Patak.
Mm-hmm.
I love Tomalak. I think he's a brilliant character.
Oh, God, yes. All right. Well, then, I forgot to put this in, so I'll do it. So what do we think about this episode? I liked the episode. I thought it was pretty good. Poor Geordi. I mean, do you guys consider this a Geordi episode?
Yeah.
Me too. And I think he does great. So, LaVar, you did a good one for this one, in my opinion. What about you, Doc?
I actually also like this episode a lot too. I don't think it's not the best of season 3, but by quite some way. But I'm a big fan of season 3 in general. I think this is a very good episode, and actually, I think it's really solid in the way that the A line and the B line kind of reinforce each other, and I think it raises the stakes how that is brought in, because a lot of the stuff that goes on the ship as the shenanigans down on the planet, you don't need the story to be as involved as it turns out to be. And I think it's kind of a good sign of very good writing and good drama that's being put across there. And I have to say, in this episode, I absolutely love Worf. I think he's written really, really well. And not necessarily agreeing with the decision he makes, but you can see exactly where he's coming from. And you know that he's kind of been true to the character in this episode. And you're kind of given the impression as you're led along that it's all going to work out okay in the end, and I like that they don't quite manage to make it all work out in the end. Anyway, enough about me. Colin, over to you.
Now, you can talk all you like, mate. It's your birthday tomorrow. And I do like this episode. I like it. It reminds me of the film that was with Dennis Quaid and Luke Gossett Jr. in, which is Enemy Mine, which I believe was before this came out. I think it's like 4 or 5 years difference. Which is also about two people who crash land on a planet and have to survive. But I do like this great character moments in it. Geordi is my least favourite next-gen character. But having said that, I do think in this episode, he's really good because he's not the usual Geordi.
I have to ask, why is he your least favorite?
Oh, God, how long you got? He's condescending. He takes credit for everyone else's work. He talks down to people instead of talking to people. He's abrupt. He's got no man management skills at all, considering he's a department head. And he always seems to be shouting at people or barking at people. He doesn't actually talk to people. That's probably why you can't get a woman.
Ah. But he tried.
Yeah, he's tried, yeah. Well, the only way he succeeded was with a hologram.
Right. Yeah. Hologram's going to kick his ass someday.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, guys. So we're visiting Planet Hell again, I'm sure. Only this time it's called Galorndon Core, where no good deed ever goes unpunished. I'm sorry. No good deed goes unpunished. I put the ever. The Enterprise is off air, that is, entering a distress signal from a craft. No one knows what the craft is yet. At least they don't say. It's just a craft. And I think it's because of this episode that the sensors were upgraded and will be able to detect a Romulan craft next time it sees it. What do you think?
Nah.
Hmm.
They'll be just as invisible as ever next time.
No, I don't know. I think Worf, or number one, will actually use the word Romulan scout ship. But it's a craft. See, that's what I say. They fine-tune the sensors so they know exactly what kind of craft it is next time. Okay, let's talk about Worf real quick. James, you said you don't agree with Worf's decision. I kind of felt the same way, but actually, I don't. I don't agree with Worf's decision, but I understand it. He's not human. He doesn't have our values or morals. So why should we be, I mean, what was it, three times we're trying to convince him to do the right thing, do the right thing? Well, that's human, do the right thing, not Klingon, do the right thing.
No, I completely accept that. And I think that's as we go into the episode, I'm sure there's a deeper conversation that we can have. I think that Worf is completely justified within his moral code, and we kind of know what the moral code of the Klingon is. I think from an outsider's perspective, in my opinion, I think that there's the debate that Picard, or the plea that Picard gives Worf right at the end, that is expected to convince the audience, and also expected to convince someone like Worf, when he clearly mentions how high the stakes are, and how this is, even you can consider it in terms of, is it more valuable to be, for him to be alive, etc. Everything is pushing in the direction that really Worf should be making the decision that I think the viewer expects him to make. But I kind of agree. I think within Worf's moral compass, he's perfectly within his right and rights to decline.
Right.
So in that case, then it's an issue to both think that Worf was wrong from a human perspective. If someone had killed your parents, would you help keep them alive?
Well, that is a very good question. If they killed my parents, no. But let's continue the question and say, 9/11, was anybody in our call here affected by 9/11? Did we lose any relatives in the World Trade Center? And my guess is you guys probably have it, and I don't know of anyone else. But let's take Worf. He lost his parents on 9/11 because Muslims used airplanes as bombs. Does that mean he should hate all Muslims, or we should hate all human values? Back up, human values. Should we hate all Muslims till the end of time?
Well, no, not us personally, because we wasn't affected.
Right. Well, but I said, what if we were? I mean, this guy didn't do a thing. The guy who, I suppose, why is he even on this planet? Obviously, they were up to no good. But
I think the difference there, though, is Muslims are a religion. This is a race.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not hating a religion. He's hating a race because of what that race represents and what they did to his parents.
Right. So, but,
you know, the easiest way to look at it is if you actually take the attack that he hates him for, we know, because obviously, spoilers, the Enterprise C was there.
Yeah.
And we know they all got wiped out. So, but does the Federation doesn't hate Romulans? So I think this is a unique Klingon perspective as opposed to a human perspective.
Right. So if that Romulan, or not that Romulan, but a Romulan had killed your parents, because it's a different race, we're not even talking human race, we're talking different species, could you do the same thing? Could you feel the same way? Or would you help?
No, because I don't blame, I mean, I wouldn't blame, like, someone who's alive now, I wouldn't blame them for the actions of their grandparents. Because that's basically what he's doing. He's blaming someone who's alive now for the actions of someone who's like two or three generations above him. You know, somewhere, I think it's the human thing, it's also the Federation viewpoint. Someone somewhere has to draw a line in the sand and say, look, let's start from here and move forward, and hopefully we can achieve peace. And I think that's what, and that's the same now. I mean, humanity as a species is at war somewhere all the time. But someone always says, look, this needs to stop at some point. And they draw the line in the sand and you move forward, you know. Just the two world wars, you know. All through human history, there's been wars. And at some point, then wars stop because someone makes peace.
Right.
But the Romulan actually says to Worf anyway that he doesn't want his DNA inside him. He doesn't want to be contaminated. So this hatred isn't just Klingons against Romulans. It's Romulans and Klingons as well. Mm-hmm. It's a two-way hatred.
I think in the end, the Romulan probably would have been happy if he did it anyway. But
I think most people try to be alive.
Right. Yeah. I've noticed, Star Trek seems to glamorize death a little bit too much. But I wonder if Worf's parents were killed by a fellow Klingon. I mean, would he hate all other Klingons forever then?
Well, he hates the Duras family.
Yeah. Well, the Duras family are dishonorable, but, I mean, obviously. Okay. So, all right. Hey, Doc, anything you want to add before we go on?
So where exactly are we in the episode?
Oh, we haven't really started.
We have a little pocky.
Yeah, we haven't. I know, we haven't really started. I mean, by the way, I have to say that when I first started watching this, I was thinking, why on earth are they down on the planet? They don't quite tell you until you get out of the teaser as to why they're down there. I'm not convinced.
Actually, my first thought was, why does no one ever wear a spacesuit?
That's also true. I'm not convinced they should all be down there. I think they're kind of down there so that one of them can get in trouble. You know how they usually try to set this stuff up. And I have to say, I like, you know, overall, I like the way that they like introduce, you know, the lost Geordi in this episode. And I actually quite like that it is Geordi that is lost, because I think it gives...
make him sound like a puppet.
It gives them opportunities to tell the story in different ways, right? He's able to figure things out in unique ways, and he's also able to fall over and lose his abilities in unique ways as well. So I like the setup where it basically is, hey, Geordi goes down to a planet, gets stuck in some electromagnetic suit. They happen to bring back a Romulan who was down there for reasons that are not entirely clear.
Right. Well, obviously did they crash?
So I think it's a strong start.
Yeah, that was a healthy Federation officer for the damaged Romulan.
Mm.
And this is the first time we've seen the Romulans, right, since the neutral zone, as far as I know. I think that there was a mention of them in, West Silence's Lease or whatever it happened to be. The Contagion, of course. There was a Romulan lady on that one. But it was more of a tangential storyline that happened to have the Romulans in it. But I think this is the first confrontation, them coming into the neutral zone or them being around the neutral zone and people getting a bit upset.
Hmm. Okay, well, we got Geordi Vision again. What'd you think of that?
I like Geordi Vision.
Do too.
Geordi Vision. you get that on Netflix?
In my notes, I call it Visor Vision, but Geordie Vision is better.
Yeah.
See, this is one of the things that got me at the start is they can't bring Data down because of the electromagnetic storms. Yet Geordi's visor and all their electronic equipment works.
Right, we'd be unscrambling his circuits for, something like it. I think Wrecker said we'd be unscrambling his circuits for weeks. Why? Yeah. I mean, yeah, but
and all that, Geordi's visor works and everything else works. And also, if they're going to go the route that it's because it's got a positronic brain, Geordi actually says he uses a positronic scan.
The positron scan.
Yeah.
Same thing, you think?
Same thing. Well, I don't know. Oh. I just thought it was really funny. Like, can't bring Data down because of these storms. But hey, all the gear works.
For now. Yeah, for now.
But you can imagine though that the next line from "It's a good thing we didn't bring Data down. He would have been scrambling the circuits for weeks." Maybe the next line from Geordi was, "Nah, I still think we should have tried. See how it goes."
Yeah, you can always serve Barbie Guinan. It's fine.
Give them a couple weeks off. So, yeah. So if they did bring Data and you have to unscramble the circuits for weeks, do you consider that like a leave of absence or a medical thing, or just?
Yeah, it's probably a leave of absence. Yeah, but also does that mean that if Data is subject to electromagnetic storms, wouldn't that be kind of limiting in space? Because they have problems with electromagnetic storms in Star Trek a lot.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think in a TOS episode, they couldn't use the transporter because of the electromagnetic storm. So
okay.
It's nice to see they've moved on.
Okay. All right. So Riker, LaForge, and Worf beam down to a very inhospitable planet where Triders are only valid for 5 meters. Sorry, I tried to do Worf there. And the only way back to the ship is to be standing near a transport beacon that will beam up whatever in 14 minutes, 40 seconds. So, the transport...
Why 15 minutes?
I know, yeah. Well, that's when the window in the storm was going to dissipate.
Right, yeah.
But, here's the thing. The transport beacon, does it basically only transport beings? I mean, obviously when they transported aboard was the dust and the rocks that were with them there. Maybe not. I don't know.
I suppose they just do a wide beam.
Yeah.
Whatever is like, living tissue, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So while they're walking around, they discover the remains of a Romulan ship, and Geordi is able to determine the ship self-destructed after it crashed. Boy, that sure is suspicious. But of course, it left remnants that they could walk around on.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think the... Are we led to believe that the destruction afterwards is either unusual or in any way kind of dishonorable? Because I would have thought it would be standard procedure. And I'm pretty sure they even mention it in other episodes with the Federation where they would, effectively self-destruct a craft so that it wouldn't be found by the people.
Right.
So I thought it was perfectly reasonable for them
to do this. Standard military practice now, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, like I said, in the future, we're going to have another Romulan craft that self-destructs.
Yes.
Not long.
Oh, I can't wait for that one.
That is a good episode. I do like that episode.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so... Worf finds a Romulan who tries to kill him until Worf slaps him with his left hand. Do you ever think about if you got in a fight that you'd take that thing with your wrist and blast it just like they do up in someone's nose?
Can't say I have, no.
I often wondered if somebody jumped me and I had to fight them or something, I had to fight them off, if I'd be using some Starfleet moves, the palm to the nose, the elbow to the stomach, and the fist to the face thing, you know? Yeah, these are the things I think about when I'm all alone and the power goes out. Okay. So, while they're walking around... Oh, this shoot. Geordi falls into a cavern. don't you think his visor would have maybe seen the instability in the ground that he was walking on?
Maybe the storm was, like, limited his vision.
Yeah. I couldn't make out what Geordi Vision was showing me.
Well, his visor did do a very nice bouncing routine. Because when he falls in the hole, it's on one side, and when he wakes up, it's on the other.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a long. It was a long way down too.
It was a lot. Yeah, yeah. He bounced,
and he didn't break any bones.
I mean, obviously, it depends how you land and what you land in. But that was a very, very, very long drop, right? And even to the extent that I'm not convinced that he would have been able to climb out of it. He obviously gets out of it in the end, but it's pretty, you know, pretty tough going.
Well, that was a pretty ingenious way of getting out. He could see the metals in the dirt, and he's putting the metals together. The phaser melts them until they harden up to, I don't know what they're called, spikes of some kind.
Yeah, it's also nice to know the phaser's got a melt setting as well.
Yeah.
As well as heating up rock, vaporize, it's got melt.
And also the exploder head, of course.
Yeah. I'd be willing to bet there's a setting for grilled cheese, too.
Oh, there's gotta be a grilled cheese setting.
Yeah. Psst, oh, perfect. Yeah.
George Foreman at your heart.
Yes.
And actually, this is why when I was mentioning earlier why I like this episode, in particular, Geordi being down on the planet. You know, the fact that Geordi can pick up some of the metal and then turn it into things because he has the, you know, extra vision, and that obviously also helps him with the neutrino beacon and things like that. I think it's good because if you ask yourself the question, so what does, you know, Geordi give you over, you know, Ensign Ricky being down on the planet? And I think that he does offer a lot just because of the, you know, his unique vision or his unique talents.
Yeah. I will say one thing about the spikes that he made, though, to climb out. They was very well made, seeing as he just melted some ore into a mud hole. Because when he was climbing out, there was a lovely spike with a nice pommel on the end. And
yeah.
It's amazing what you can do with a mud cast.
I mean, true. And I still have to say, I think it's an astonishing feat of upper body strength that he displays in this episode.
Oh.
Or apparently would have to have displayed.
He's been doing the same gym as Picard, because in Star Trek First Contact, Picard pulls himself up them ropes.
Oh, so yes, he does indeed.
They go to the same gym.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, of course they do. They're on the same ship.
Yeah, there you go. The personal trainer works on upper body strength a lot.
There you go. See, you were being sarcastic, but you didn't realize. But anyway, so yeah, he doesn't break any bones. Other people will break bones when they fall. So
yeah, but he lands on soft mud.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he lands face down in the soft mud, too. So, good thing he didn't drown in the muddy water.
That's true, yeah. I didn't think of that. Yeah, you can drown in 1 inch of water, can't you?
Yeah. But he wakes up and screams, Riker! Commander Riker! War! Now I'd have been like, Will! But of course, they can't hear anything because it's so loud.
No, but we're not going to hear Worf calling him when he finds Romulan.
Well, he's not down the hole, though, right? You know, the fact that you're down the hole is probably going to,
well, yeah,
make things worse.
Yeah.
So I like that. Well, I don't know. It was noteworthy that each time that Riker or Geordi were trying to shout at each other, you had the thunder going on in the background. Very poorly timed, or perhaps, you know, well timed, depending on your outlook, thunder, just as you're trying to shout over and find your friend.
Do you think Klingons have got better hearing than humans?
They must have.
Because Geordi shouted Worf a lot more than he shouted Riker.
Well, I mean, to be honest, I mean, do you think Worf's going to let you down more often than Riker? I mean, I would have only shouted Worf, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know something interesting? It looked like they were putting Geordi through some life or death obstacle course almost the entire episode, because, I mean, he falls down this cavern. He gets himself out of the cavern. And then what I didn't understand is he was trying to climb up these, like, watery steps with water coming down.
And it was almost like as if he had slid down another chasm, right? I didn't know where that came from.
Exactly.
It's not Star Trek if there's not a cave.
Well, yeah, but that supposes he went down that watery slope to begin with.
He had to wash the mud off.
Oh, he was trying to get up that. And then eventually he said, screw this, and went around it. At least that's what it looked like to me. So, we have only done the teaser. So what do you guys think of the teaser so far?
Good teaser.
No, I agree. I think the one weak point of this episode, in my opinion, and it kind of even introduces itself in the teaser, is that I'm never sure why the Romulans are here or what they're up to. And I feel that that's a little bit of a mystery that is set up that is not resolved.
Yes. Nor did they challenge them on it.
Yeah. So that's one thing that, you know, when you do watch it at the beginning, you are expecting a little more payoff than we actually get. But I do know that obviously we're in the middle of a Romulan arc, and there will be other episodes of Romulans this season. And I don't recall it being easy to, you know, integrate this into the rest of their, you know, storyline and see how this naturally leads into what comes next. But but I'll keep my eyes open as in the coming weeks.
I think it does, James, that it does highlight their sneakiness.
Right.
Well, really sneaky when Tomalak, like, you know, goes on an open comm link and go, hello, we're going into the neutral zone, we'll be there soon, my mother's maiden name is, and my password is here, and you'll find...
His password is password.
Yeah, and... I mean, what was that about? Yeah. Sneaky Romulans, eh?
But the fact that they managed to cross the neutral zone, get as far as that planet, you know, because we know from other episodes that the Federation has, like, sensor nets across the neutral zone and that, so... Yeah. Maybe it's like that TOS episode when they were testing the new technology and they thought they'd go into Federation space to do it.
That didn't work.
No.
That, you know, for Spock's father or father of some father, of long-distant father.
Father's father's father.
I am Sarek of Romulus. Anyway. So Picard figures that it's a great place to build a new base for an offensive against the Federation.
Apart from the fact it's in Federation space.
I don't know necessarily if it would have been a good thing since, what's his name? Romulan.
Tomalak?
No, the other one. The one that's with Geordi.
Patak.
Nope. He's a dead one.
Bakra.
Yeah, indeed. Good, strong Romulan name. Obviously, since he couldn't walk, maybe that planet wouldn't have been such a great place. So that's why I think they crash-landed it. Because obviously, if they had just landed softly and went out and said, nope, this ain't for us, let's go, they couldn't. I mean, then we find another Romulan with his green blood nearby. That's the one that tries to kill Worf. That was Patak.
Yeah. Or they could have been scouting it and the storm damaged the ship.
Mm-hmm. So do you think all Romulans are stupid? I will not answer any questions. I will not answer any questions. I am alone. I will not answer any questions.
You're talking about the double bluff here, right?
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding. He wasn't alone.
No. I agree with that. And I also, I suppose in a way, I was about to say I don't think Riker got a lot of information, but of course he did get the information that he was not alone. But they don't seem to act upon that, right? They don't seem to necessarily believe that he wasn't alone, given that it was such a clear kind of covering of the story that, I'm not going to answer any questions, but I was here absolutely alone without any question. You should not look for survivors. Promise me you won't look for survivors.
Got the ice of spikes.
Yeah, they didn't really follow that up. I would have thought that either that went over Picard and Riker's head, which I can't believe that to be true, or they didn't really care.
Riker probably didn't really care because at this precise moment in time, Riker's in shouty mode. I mean, he's shouting at absolutely everybody.
Oh, he's actually, he's quite perturbed this episode. He seems to be taking it very hard that he lost Geordi down a hole.
And how did he blamed O'Brien?
Oh, yeah. And the idea of a, hey, beam up one of these ghosts, you know, is that safe? I can't imagine it's safe.
Beam up that nuclear bomb, and if it is a nuclear bomb, we'll deal with it later.
Right. Beam it out quick.
Oh, Commander, it's okay. You know, I tried to beam up those ghosts, and look, we've got half of Geordi's leg. Great. What a wonderful idea.
You didn't go out enough.
Put it on ice.
Right. If I was a Romulan, I'd have continued to say, I will not answer questions. I will not answer questions. You see my ass? Pucker up and kiss it. I will not answer questions.
But that in itself says something about the Romulans, because he was prepared to let the other man die.
Right. That's true. I mean, well, I suppose that's the, like Geordi says, it's a Romulan path to glory. If it's a Romulan path to glory, of course you're going to let him die.
I don't think it's that alien, though, right? I doubt even people captured behind enemy lines in a war with humans would have sold out their crew if they were hiding in a desert or something like that.
I don't think it's selling out, though. I mean, he knows the planet has damaged his brain. He knows they've destroyed the ship. So what would giving away the other Romulans is there? What would that achieve by not giving that away, apart from killing him?
Well, I mean, I suppose he's probably still holding out hope that they're going to get rescued by a warbird, which, in fairness, is only a couple of hours away.
Yeah.
I have to say that whenever you mention the fact that you know he's brain dead and they've survived the crash, and I'm always sitting here thinking, and that's the dude that managed to jump Geordi, the guy that survived the crash and is actually going, fall into pieces due to radiation, but he still managed to put one past Geordi.
Twice.
Gotta be proud this week.
Yeah, Geordi is extremely gullible for the second time.
Why didn't he grab that phaser?
No, that's what I was thinking. Why is he picks him up? He carries him. He helps him into the other bit of the cave. And at no point does he take the phaser off him, off him.
It's almost as if had he dropped his phaser, Geordi would have picked it up and handed it back.
Yeah. Here, you drop these.
Here you go, Commodore.
Yeah.
What was the Commodore thing?
Is it on stun setting? Yeah, it's on stun setting. There you go. Yeah, it's good.
Oh, hell no. The Federation is the only one who uses stun settings. Everyone else dies.
Geordi's face is on melt.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he might have put it back down. Okay. All right. So let's talk about Picard's decision not to allow one Romulan ship to cross the neutral zone. First of all, explain this neutral zone. I probably should know this, but can anybody enter the neutral zone? They just can't go out of it on the other side. I always thought it was don't enter the neutral zone. That's a dead no man's land.
No. So it certainly later becomes you can't enter the neutral zone. This episode seems to play as if it's the neutral zone is a place where everyone can go and sit and hang around, but you can't cross into the other territory. But, I mean, I'm with you, Lou. By the time we get later on in TNG and Deep Space Nine, the neutral zone is something that neither party can go into. So it becomes effectively a buffer, whereas here it's almost gone.
I was going to say, in TOS, the Klingon Federation neutral zone, you're not allowed to enter it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it seems you're allowed to enter the Romulan Federation neutral zone in the early stages anyway, like you said. So I presume that's a different treaty.
Yeah, I mean, because fundamentally, there's going to be a treaty behind these things, right? I think Lou is right in just noting that this does seem to change, this thing. And this episode is a little bit... I don't know if it's the only episode where this happens, but it's certainly out on the limb. One of the two.
I mean, obviously, later on in Unification, they blatantly crossed the neutral zone.
Yeah, but that's while cloaked, which is...
Yeah, but it's still Federation people crossing the neutral zone and the ramifications of doing that.
Yeah, but they're doing it very, very quietly. And as long as you're doing it quietly and you don't get caught, you're okay.
We have to tiptoe. Yeah. Okay, so how is the neutral zone different from the, and I always butcher this word, demilitarized zone? I did it!
Same thing. It's the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
They just needed a different name, right?
I mean, terminology.
Right.
they need a different name, otherwise when everyone says neutral zone, I go, which one? Which one?
Which one?
Between them.
Although, between... isn't it a demilitarized zone you can, merchants and that can pass through?
Well, anybody could pass through. That was always my question about the Cardassian demilitarized zone. Does that mean you're not allowed to carry weapons in that zone or ships with the phaser capabilities in that zone? Which
Nothing of a military aspect.
Hmm. Of course, both sides broke that.
Oh, yeah. That, like all treaties, they last as long as the ink's wet.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Okay, so let's see here. Where was I? Oh, so Picard's decision to allow only one, or not allow the one ship. It seems to me that if Tomalak is going to bust through the neutral zone, first of all, Picard should have called for backup. Oh, that's right. There's never a ship in the area when you need it. But, you know, to spare a war with the Romulans, you know, maybe we have no proof of what they were doing wrong. We can't overrule that they had a navigational glitch. So, are we really within our rights to hold them?
Yeah, but like Picard said, the navigational glitch that carries them all the way across the neutral zone.
Well, again, but if we speculate or we agree that they can enter the neutral zone, they just can't hit the other side, then maybe they say it's just a light year off. I don't know. I don't know, Doc, maybe you can school us again and tell us, is there a measurement of distance for a light year? I was like 25 million miles or anything.
Oh, and also I think, you know, an argument that you'd make, right, is that we're already talking here about a scout ship.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a ship that at the moment we think there's one person on board, that's probably not hanging around the neutral zone alone, right? There's going to have to be a larger ship to have supplies and so on. So I think best case scenario, this is a kind of reconnaissance from a larger ship that's kind of, you know, that's spying. I think that's best case scenario. But I do agree with you, Lou, that I think that, or at least it is a point worthy of discussion that Picard is, I mean, I think he's in diplomat mode this week, right? He's really, you know, working that, and it's necessary for him to consider a lot of different things in progress. The first one is that he's going to have someone on board that is, you know, eventually he does die, but, you know, even from Picard's perspective, he's very ill, and there is a need to get him, well, there is a need to make a decision, because in the event of him not making the right decision and the guy dying, you know, you are going to be, the Federation's going to be liable for that, and the Romulans aren't going to be very happy with it. At the same time, I don't think the Federation can come across as guys who don't really mind their territory being violated. And I think that that's what Picard's trying to square up here.
So do you believe that he was right not allowing him, or should he just let him come in and get his guy?
Actually, okay, personally, I probably, and also I'm kind of like a nice guy. I would have probably let him come in and get the guy, and then as long as he got out of the way quickly, that would have been fine. But I think that from a military perspective, or from a kind of, you know, sovereignty of territory perspective, you don't want to have continual violations of people testing your borders.
True.
So it's a tough one, right? And at the end of the day, you know, as always, Picard makes the right call.
All he has to do is just escort him back to the neutral zone. Oh, wait. Okay. Hopefully you guys picked up on that sarcasm.
Yeah, but we still don't know how big a light year is.
Oh, yeah. Doc, anything?
Okay, well, the speed of light is 3 times 10 to the 8th power meters per second.
You said that.
And if you just calculate how many seconds there are in a year, then you'll get there. I don't know off the top of my head. I could do it, if you like, now in Excel.
I got it. I just looked it up. It's 5.88 trillion miles.
Wow. Huh. So I can get from here to England in, say, one millionth of a second.
Yeah. Probably something daft like that. That's an extraordinary amount of distance.
Wow.
I did not know it was that big. Hmm. What's the sun? The sun's, was it 93 million miles away?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's...
I think the sun's around 3 minutes or so. It's probably not three, but it's a couple of minutes away in terms of light speed.
I was going to say...
That's huge amount of distance.
Yeah, I was going to say, why am I answering that question when we have the physicist on board? Okay. Tomalak says he'll be at the Federation border of the Neutral Zone in 5 hours, but Pi doesn't answer. That's an interesting name for the craft, Pi. Tomalak to Pi.
Do you think it's P-I?
Yeah, that could be.
Not P-I-E.
All right, that very well may be. All right, so, well, let's see, we talked about that already. So,
it's a very English name for a Romulan ship, isn't it?
Pi. Yeah. Or, we never got the ship, the name of the Romulan warship. So, Dr. Crusher is looking for what we, I guess, would consider a plasma donor. Not a blood donor, but a ribosome donor. And she rolls out the Vulcans. I think that's funny that she had to toss that in real fast, because we're going to go, what? No, there's Vulcan. Oh, we have to rule out the Vulcans. Were they not the kissing cousins of the Romulans?
Yes. I had a problem with that, how they couldn't, like, the problem I had with was they couldn't synthesize what they needed.
Couldn't do that. Romulans were out. Obviously, it was because we had to have this moral drama with Worf. So, but even if they couldn't, they modify a Vulcan's ribosome to match the Romulan.
Yeah, that's what I would have thought. But little, it just seems very convenient that a Vulcan, who is very, very similar to a Romulan, is no good, but a Klingon is.
Right. That seems very weird. Take a Vulcan, Vulcan ribosome, put it in a little tomato soup, and I think you'd got it.
I have to say, I love Crusher in this when she starts mentioning that, you know, she mentions something, words to the effect that, it's treating the Romulans, it's very difficult. It's like Vulcans, but there are some very subtle differences. And you think, really? How could there be? And are you sure you just haven't undressed him properly yet? you know, he's sitting there in his old military outfit, and maybe she's just confused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't add up at all, that whole premise.
Okay. I hope I didn't skip too much when I say, is Data useless or what? Because it's got to be Wesley Crusher that comes up with the neutrino source.
Yeah, that bothered me.
That bothered me as well.
And
that really bothered me.
Not only that.
Neutrino, straight away, he thinks it's Wesley.
Exactly. He goes, Wesley Crusher.
There's 1,000 people on that ship. You know, it's not to say it would have been Data. It could have been anyone from the science department or engineering department. But no, straight away, it's Wesley.
Wesley. Okay, I've got a couple of problems here, because I'm a big Wesley apologist.
we know.
I'm a big apologist in general. But here's the problem. If you think about what Data is good at, in terms of, you know, what is a machine good at, it's actually suggesting stuff. You know, because you can... The things that a machine would lack is the, you know, imagination, is the way of combining certain things, is the seeing that, you know, that you can look at things from different angles. But in terms, when they say, well, how could we communicate with the planet, he should be listing 60 or 70 different ways of being able to communicate with the planet, that even if they're highly theoretical and not particularly practical. And I don't know, I don't like how Data has to sit there going, I don't really know. And then Wesley goes, oh, what about neutrino pulse? And it's like, oh yeah, that'll work. Well, you know, why hasn't Data thought about that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then from a writing perspective, what ends up happening is that the writers think that too many people love Wesley and they need to knock him down a bit. So they put the ridiculous line of, you know, of Geordi going, oh, Wesley Crusher, what a great guy. Yeah, he's given me this neutrino pulse. He's a genius. I love Wesley.
Yeah, if you were
or
a woman.
Words to that effect. And you think, what the?
If you were a woman, I would have taken you to the holodeck.
Actually, no. You don't even have to be a woman. Book me some time on the holodeck with Wesley.
Yeah.
It's just soul-destroying.
I don't think the writers figured that we loved Wesley at this point. I think it was Gene Roddenberry who loved Wesley at this point.
Yeah, because Wesley was him.
Right.
But you're doing nothing but harm to the character by pointing this stuff out.
Yeah.
You know, had it just been Wesley... If Wesley wants to make a suggestion and it happens to be the one that's taken on and it happens to be the right suggestion, then fine. But we don't need a scene where everyone stands around and, you know, and has a nice...
Pats him on the back.
Pats on the back. Well, I was actually going to say something else, but you don't need that scene. Mm-hmm. And it's frustrating when they do that.
Right.
Anyway, and Geordi could have just said, why does it go Enterprise?
True.
You know, he didn't have to... You know, the fact that he says, why does it go Wesley Crusher, the fact that Wesley came up with it and not died to bother me, and also the fact that Geordi straight away thought it was Wesley bothered me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I mean, what's the point of sending this boy to the academy? He already knows everything you need to know.
You know, it's got to be Wesley has to save the day every frigging week.
Right. Okay, so let's see here. Sand in the boots. Well, there's really nothing to talk about sand in his boots. I thought maybe he was going to go for a second phaser, actually.
I was actually amazed he had sand with his boots, because every time we've seen him walking, he just seems to be walking in mud.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it was raining all the time, so where did he get dry sand from?
Right. Yeah. Oh, he must have had some chapped feet when he got back. Oh, I hate that. Don't you, when you walk in water for a while, and you come back, and you pretty much have got... moon-pitted feet. That's a different story. Mr. Worf, good news. We found a compatible ribosome donor. You!
I have to say, I absolutely love this, and the thing that I've got down is, congratulations, Worfs. You've won your chance to save a Romulan's life. You think, okay.
Your ticket's coming.
I'll take what's behind door number two.
Yes, indeed.
She should have done it Jeopardy style.
In the box.
Yeah, what's in the box?
She should have done it Jeopardy style.
Yeah. What is no freaking way for 200, Alex? Okay, so wait a minute. You won't be a donor? Well, wait. But you knew that's why we were testing. Oh, I don't mind testing. Why didn't Worf just say, no, you're not testing me? Or do you think maybe they could have forced him not only get tested, could Picard have ordered him to be a donor?
Well, no. Worf just likes tests.
No.
He's a Klingon. He likes being tested.
Poke me, prod me, I don't care.
Yeah. It's a Klingon thing.
Okay. So,
I mean, also, I assume that, you know, the tests weren't like invasive tests or anything like that. They probably would have been just, you know, either a mild scan or even looking at the records that Crusher already has on the ship.
I don't think so, because she said she was going to schedule testing for the crew. I mean, if she just said, computer, find me a compatible ribosome donor or whatever, zone donor, it would have been that easy, but she had to test.
How long would it have took them to test 1,000 people?
I would say it would take a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like she stumbled on it too quick. She immediately deleted the Vulcans. I mean, what would happen if he got the wrong ribosome? Do you think it might have held him out a little bit longer till they beat up?
But the obvious question to ask here is, Worf is the only Klingon on the ship.
Yeah.
So what if Worf wasn't there? What would they have done then?
He would have died.
Yeah, indeed. Also, to a certain extent, right, this is treated a bit like a magic bullet. So if they have it, then he's absolutely fine. If they don't have it, he'll die. And sometimes it can be like that, but I thought it was just a little bit, it's a little too clean cut, right? The chances are, especially when in the second scene, when Worf actually gets taken to his deathbed and he's, you know, they're having the chat. If you're that far gone, even if you are, you know, waiting for a blood transfusion or something, it's still pretty touch and go whether or not you can even take it if you're that far gone. So I
other episodes, James, where we see someone who's injured and they can't cure them straight away. So they put them in stasis.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, stasis.
Our favorite.
Sure.
Put the Romulan in stasis?
What they should have done with the Romulan, put them in one of those torpedo things that Kalar was in and shoot him towards Romulus. Everyone's
a winner. Yeah, just fire him at the neutral zone.
There you go. There you go. See, good point here.
Until Tomalak is on his way.
Yeah, your pie is heading for you. Okay. Now, so I think you said Picard might not have been able to order him. I kind of think he might have, the greater good.
No, because he actually, when he has him in the champ with him in the red room, he says, "I'm asking you to."
But he also says, "I don't want to have to order you."
Yeah, but he doesn't.
No, he doesn't, but I'm saying, could he and should he?
Well, presumably he could, but no, he shouldn't. Mm. Because if you're going to donate something of you to someone else, you should do it of your own free will.
Right. I agree.
I mean, I'm not sure. I think he could have ordered him to do so. And I suppose to a certain extent that, you know, that is an extra step, you know, morally speaking, that Picard would have to live with, having taken that decision. I do think it's perfectly compatible for Picard to be of that opinion, to actually believe that, you know, the greater good overrides Worf's ability to make the decision himself. I think that's a perfectly legitimate position. But I can understand why Picard doesn't want to force the issue. And I do, you know, I do like this because I think it is true to Worf's character that he would, you know, that he would kind of make this. And I like the fact that there's so much riding on it at this point. We know that, you know, we know that Tomalak is very distrustful of the circumstances, and we know that people are coming, and we know that there's a guy that's very ill, and eventually that guy dies, and you could be potentially responsible through, you know, through a mission of the death of, you know, millions of people. But from Worf's perspective, it's not about that, right? It's, you know, it's something else that is almost more important than that. And I like, you know, I like this character development in Worf.
Yeah. It was also good for adding to the tension.
Absolutely, no, absolutely, without question. It does really raise it. And instead of it being, you know, instead of it being the guy's not likely to do anything, it really does become an issue of, wow, we need to get Worf to do something he's very uncomfortable with in order to, you know, possibly to save us on this. And I think it's very well, you know, very well played, especially because if you look at the rest of the story, you kind of don't necessarily need this. And I'm not saying that it's superfluous, but I'm saying that if you didn't have it, would you think that the episode is in any way lacking? I'm sure they could have stretched this out without the blood donor storyline, but I think
they could have done it without the blood donor storyline. But I think the actual blood donor storyline adds to the tension of the Romulans coming to dinner.
It absolutely does indeed. But it's not a necessity to be there. So as a result, it's obviously it's a good choice that the writers made to get this. To get this written like this, and it was a good conscious choice that they made. So I can like applaud them for that.
Well, of course, if Beverly Crusher had gone onto the bridge and asked Wesley, he would have found out how to cue the Romulan.
Maybe if it wasn't Beverly Crusher, but it was Pulaski, maybe the Romulan wouldn't actually have a terminal condition in the first place.
No. Yeah, he was probably fine before he went into sickbay.
Yes.
Oh, that could be true. Yeah. Yeah, she gave him the wrong hypo, and now she's trying to cover her tracks. I wonder if
she did. Of course, she gave him a horrendous, like, Klingon illness that he had no natural immunity to, which is why she needed Worf's blood.
Yeah, yeah. Cover this one up.
It's all making sense now.
And Dr. Salar, she's been sworn to secrecy. Now, do you think Beverly might have gotten more cooperation with Worf had she not told him that he wouldn't have felt a thing, or there'd be no pain or anything? Maybe if she said, now, you got to know that the side effects are extreme pain and massive discomfort. And do you think Worf would have said, sign me up?
Yeah, and no human could survive it.
No.
Only the strongest can survive this pain. Actually, to a certain extent, with the reverse psychology, when the Romulan and Worf end up talking, when Worf gets brought down to effectively talk to him on his deathbed, and they have that conversation. Well, first of all, let me put my cards on the table. I don't think Worf is going there believing that he's going to have his mind changed or prepared to change his mind. but that kind of is floating potentially in there. So I don't know how people read that, but I thought that the reaction of the Romulan was actually really great, and I could easily see that being, you know, someone's reaction in those circumstances. And it reminded me a little bit of time for a TOS callback. It reminded me of Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, right, where you have these two guys that are completely obsessed with
black and white,
not forgiving each other. Yeah, black and white faced dudes.
Yes.
And then Worf and him, they were behaving in that manner. At least that's what I took from it.
So you think maybe Worf was just going in there to let him know he's going to die because I refuse to help you?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think he had any intention of hearing him out or listening for mercy or anything like that. He was because he was ordered to go there by Crusher, and he was prepared to sit there and stand as, I suppose, he made his case, but no intention, in my mind at least, of Worf ever yielding.
And that the hatred between the two species is reinforced in, another episode where the Romulan comes on the ship and just hurls insults at Worf.
Your dog, or... Yeah. Silence your...
Yeah, silence your Klingon dog.
Yeah, and it's just, this is a deep-seated hatred between two species. Mm-hmm. So I think if the roles were reversed, the Romulans would have let Worf die.
Oh, I think so too.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And of course, the Vulcans would have gladly given up their ribosome.
Yeah, but apparently it's slightly not compatible.
Yeah, something's a little weird on that.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's a very, very, very important question that we must discuss. And your parents let you live?
Okay, that is super. I really... so we haven't had any discussion. We haven't had a huge amount of discussion about Geordi on the planet and the discussion that goes back and forth with the other Romulan, and first him being captured and then later them becoming best buddies and, using the visor tricorder to find their way home.
Right.
But I thought that the interaction between Geordi and the Romulan was great. And I really enjoyed that. I mean, maybe it's just me being a big softy, but the idea of, the idea of Geordi having the disability, requiring technology, and it being completely alien to the Romulan as to why we would be compassionate and, not just terminate the child immediately after that was found. And that this kind of message in Trek always fills me with warmth inside. And, maybe I'm too much of a sucker for it, but I enjoy it.
Okay.
The other thing, the other side of that as well, is bearing in mind that they're in a situation that they're in, Geordi then tells the Romulan his weakness. I can't see without this visor.
Yeah, without him, I'm blind as a post or stump.
Yeah, so he's either being incredibly naive, which we already know he is because he doesn't take the visor off him, or he's gambling on going for the compassion.
Man, that's a very good point. If I was a Romulan, I'd have yanked that thing right off his face.
Yeah. You tell him, I can't see without these. So if you take this off my face, I'm blind as a bat.
Right, especially when he can... That's one of my points here. Since when is Geordi a medical tricorder? Because, he's telling him his heart rate's going up, his blood, his body temperature's going up. I would have yanked that thing off. I don't want him to know my weaknesses.
No, but Geordi tells him he's.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, he explains how the visor works and everything. If I was a Romulan, I yanked it off. You don't need this right now. So what do you think then, if he could tell the Romulan's heart rate and body temperature, why couldn't he see what was going wrong with Christy Henshaw?
Heart rate didn't change.
Oh, I kind of feeling her heart rate might have increased a little bit as she was getting more and more uncomfortable.
Yeah, that anxiety level would have raised, wouldn't it? Yeah.
He should have brought Deanna with him, sitting on the beach, just with them as he's moving closer, and she could have, given him cues like shake her head, no, forget it, Geordi, this ain't going to work. But
saying that about Deanna, do you know she was supposed to be in this episode and got... It was going to be her and Geordi that got stranded on the planet.
Yeah, would the Romulan have still been there?
I don't know. It's where's my notes? Here we go. Geordi was stranded on a planet with Troi, and it was Troi who, and they came across the Romulan. That was it. And then I was going to work then, and it was Troi who appealed to the Romulan and got the Romulan on side because Geordi couldn't do nothing because his visor was screwed.
Mm.
But then they changed the idea and dropped Troi completely.
Well,
is there no Troi in this episode at all? Because observant nature, I didn't notice that.
It's a Troi-free zone.
Well, next week isn't.
No.
She's in another room in sick bay on a chocolate sundae hangover. Well, that would have been interesting if they were marooned on a planet together and they got to know each other a little bit more. And next thing you know, they... next thing I wanted to bring up...
Well, the other thing and all about Troi is you would think she would be on the bridge because she can sense things.
Yeah.
I mean, Picard's completely in diplomat mode this week. And one thing I've always, you know, as an apologist for Troi, I always see her much more of a diplomat and... Well, I like to explain her role as much more of a diplomat and less of a counselor in a way.
Right.
So, you know, the psychoanalyst becomes very important, right, when you're dealing with these matters. And this is probably the most critical situation that Picard has faced so far. It is that what we have seen. And she's on holiday this week.
Good point. I wonder if she would have came to the bridge or she could have, sensed him down there. He's okay. He's a little confused or he's a little lost or...
Well, I mean, why wasn't she in sick bay for the interrogation? Because she's normally in on interrogations.
Not till later. I don't recall.
Yeah, I'm an empath would be handy when you're asking someone, is there anyone else down there?
Right. That's true. Yeah. Okay. All right, so Worf visits Riker in his quarters to ask if he plans to take command of the Ares and offers to go with him. Oh, wait, sorry.
No, not yet.
Oh, no, that was a while ago. We've already been past Riker's daddy problems.
Riker's daddy made nice omelets.
Oh, well, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, so Worf asks Riker if he should be a ribosome dealer. You know, and like I said, Riker makes perfect sense. You know, how long do we carry the bitterness? How long, if this Romulan dies now, how long should his family carry the bitterness against? Will it be the Federation or will it be the Klingons or both?
I didn't think it was fair on Worf, all this. You know, the Doctor appeals as a go, the Captain as a go, the First Officer as a go. You know, they should respect his decision, even if it's wrong. They should respect his decision.
Right, but it's Worf that's actually coming to visit Riker asking should he or should he not. So obviously he was still on the fence. He was telling everybody no, but he was still considering it.
Oh yeah, I think the reason he came to Riker because he sees Riker as a kindred warrior.
Yeah.
I've never understood that though. I just don't buy what Riker is that. But anyway, that's
because he's never put his crotch by your face.
Mm-hmm.
Like he does Wesley in this episode.
And Data in almost every other episode.
Data in almost every episode, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's why Wesley got the inspiration for the neutrino pulse. He was looking over saying, we need something really long to go up into the atmosphere.
Oh, God, no. No. And that's the restricted 18 episode banner.
Well, okay.
Say, Riker, is that a neutrino beam or are you just pleased to see it?
A neutrino pulse, because he sees something pulsing. Let's see here. So the Romulan would rather die than pollute his body with Klingon filth. Motion carried. So.
And so it does.
Okay. So Geordi and Bakhra decide to finally work together. Geordi finally talks him into working together. And now they're on their way on the Yellow Brick Road, about ready to go visit the wizard, when all of a sudden, Geordi's visor kicks out.
Yeah, just as Geordi starts getting compassionate, it gets disabled.
Yep. Yep, the Wicked Witch of Glundon Core takes him now. but they have to work together, with Bakra connecting the visor to the tricorder. There is a workaround that never gets brought up ever again.
No. And also, where did they clip the visor onto?
He took something apart, pulled out a little, I guess the...
So you got like a side panel.
Yeah, well, it was a top of it. He pulled something out of it, and I guess there's a connector lead that came out, and then he put the top back on, and then he connected the visor to the connector lead.
He took the USB cover off.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, whoops, red alert.
It just goes to show, as long as you've got a tricorder, you can solve anything.
Yes. Yes, I wonder why the tricorder wasn't affected.
The shielded, yeah.
But poor Geordi's visor isn't.
But no, he's not.
No. All right. So, red alert. The Rhyme and the Chip has crossed the border, and they'll be here by the next set of commercials.
It's not hanging around, is it?
No, it didn't. It came on in. What timing? I mean, goodness. They couldn't beam up the two guys before the Rhyme has to get there and puff its chest out at the Enterprise. So, Geordi almost carries Bakra to the Neutrinosaurus while Picard calls Worf into his ready room. And again, we've already discussed that he will not do it. So Picard calls Crusher and says, okay, we need to stop harassing Lieutenant Worf. And she says, oh, well, don't bother. He's dead already. So I guess, do you think maybe he would have died during the conversation with Picard? Maybe he had his intercom system on Do Not Disturb. When Crusher was trying to call him to tell him the Romulan was dead. Because it would have made the entire conversation with Picard and Worf moot.
I think he probably died round about the time when he called.
Mm.
Otherwise, she would have told him beforehand.
Yeah. But still, I mean, Worf would never had time. If Worf said, all right, Captain, I agree, I'll go do it. Got on the turbo lift, he's already dead. So yeah. Could he tell Tomlok, we did our best. We had this guy on his way down. His body just couldn't hang on.
Well, we're assuming here that Crusher didn't euthanize the guy just after Picard told him to stop hassling Worf, right?
You redheaded.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. She probably looked at a kill chart for the month and realized she was low.
Right. The Romulan that said, you redheaded bitch, I'm going to tell everyone what you did to me. No, you're not. Oh boy,
I really like Crusher.
Do you?
I don't know why we too often it turns into Crusher hatred.
Oh. It's not Crusher hatred. It's just Crusher has a high mortality rate in her sick bay.
Yeah, that's true too.
Larger than one would expect, or yes. Be able to explain through medical reasons alone.
Yes.
She can't save a life. She can't alter memories. What good is she?
She's good at euthanasia.
I hate to say, maybe we do need Pulaski back.
Yeah, she's down a leaf shaft somewhere too, like.
Well, she could have. I don't know. What do you? That is a funny question. We should have answered this question at the beginning of season 3. Where did Pulaski go? Did she take Crusher's job at Starfleet Medical, or? Anyway,
she went off with Riker's dad to make omelets.
Oh, good. That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Maybe they finally got married.
She got to spend some time with her little boy. Spent a year with her son. So she went back to dad and told him all about their son.
Mm.
He was on the Ares.
He was the one on the Ares?
Yeah, he went away on the Ares. Because Riker didn't go on the Ares, so daddy went on the Ares.
Mm.
Which we know was a deep space mission.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously Pulaski's going after Riker's dad. So she's going to be a long time trying to find him.
Or she went to the areas with him.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so LaForge and Bakra, see, I like saying Bakra, find the neutrino beacon and begin to alter its signal pattern while the Romulan ship arrives. And like I said, to puff its chest into the Enterprise.
Yeah, and this is Captain Picard at his diplomatic best.
Yeah. I warned you not to come across. You forced the situation! Well, your guy's dead, so you might as well turn around and go back.
And I love this setup because we see Picard and Tomalak lock horns on a few more occasions, and it's such a brilliant to and fro between the pair of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I want to echo that because it's something that, you know, there have been a couple of exchanges that we've kind of glossed over, But they do a really good job of, you know, Picard coming forward as a reasonable guy. But then if you listen to a lot of the dialogue, like when Tomalak, you know, I think he suggests, and then you know, after you get your away team, you're going to then proceed to neutral zone and give us back our man. You know, Picard doesn't answer that. And if you actually look at it from Tomalak's perspective, a lot of the stuff that is being said can be interpreted as being, you know, that Picard is playing them, and he also is, you know, to a certain extent threatening as well. Mm. So I like it how, I really like how the interactions are between Tomalak and Picard. And maybe I'm alone in this, but I think to a certain extent there's a bit of Dukat in Tomalak, I found.
Oh yeah. Mm. Oh yeah. Yeah. Velvet hand, a fist in a velvet glove.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the standoff has begun. But then the neutrino source changed, and Data figures those ghosts in the window seem to be flying away. Now I think I'm getting two life forms. You precious little life forms.
Do you know that popped into my head at the same time as well?
Of course. Data and life forms will never be the same.
No, never again.
So how good is poker's... So how good is Picard's poker game?
Yeah, I did find that funny when he said to Riker, put on your poker face.
And Riker said, And of course, in the next episode, we get to discuss Riker and poker. But, okay, so Picard gets to get onto the comm system and tell the Romulan ship that they have to lower the shields to beam them aboard. So I'm curious why the Romulans didn't just lower their shields and beam them aboard. And then turn around and take off with the Forge.
It's in circumstances like this that I would have imagined that the first person at Starfleet Engineering that could invent the ability for certain parts of the shield to go down mm-hmm. whilst keeping other parts of the shield active mm-hmm. would be kind of greatly rewarded. Because why can't they keep like the forward shields up?
Good point. Why do they call them forward shields and aft shields if they can't do that?
Yeah, if you're actually thinking about it, if you look at the shield strips on the Enterprise D model, then they could. There's a lateral one which is underneath the ship, obviously, on the engineering. You'd think they would be able to drop the lateral mm-hmm. to beam up, but you're still keeping all your other shields.
I mean, let me think here. Voyager, I believe it was. Voyager in their detention area, or the brig, I guess you call it, when Neelix was coming by to serve prisoners supper, I mean, they press a button and there's a little hole in the shield. Or in the
force field.
Force field, yes. So, I mean, why couldn't they do that with the...
With the shipwide shield.
Right. So, Tomalak, we've just beamed aboard your man. How is it that you didn't know that there was a second man on your one-man craft? And, you know, Tomalak, I thought it was funny. I thought it was really funny when Tomalak says, obviously, I was misinformed as the size of the craft. When all this time, I think Tomalak is the one who sent them in the first place.
Well, there's a couple of things I'd like to point out about the beam-up. First of all, how come the Romulan can now walk? Because he couldn't walk on the planet.
Well.
And also, why is Geordi wearing his visor?
Well, they found the neutrino source. He probably just took it off and put it back on. But do you think he'd still be blind?
Well, I think it would take a while to wear off.
Right, right.
But also, the Romulan couldn't walk, but he walks to the transporter room.
Right. And here all this time, we'd be unscrambling data circuits for weeks. It looks like Geordi's going to be blind for a while.
Yeah.
And he also, walks.
Why did I need to walk to the transporter room to bring the Romulan off? Why couldn't the Romulans just beam him off from the bridge?
Right.
I mean, what's clearly happening here is that as soon as Geordi and the prisoner are aboard, they're trying to pretend to be as well as they possibly can so they don't end up in sickbay. I mean...
Yeah. Bakra, you point me the way to the transporter room, please.
Just before you go, lads, I just thought you'd like to know that Crush has already killed one today. So...
All right. Well, I guess the moral of the story is you can never trust a Romulan ever. Ever.
No.
I mean, even in a even in what, two seasons from now, we come to their aid. They're seconds away from destruction. We save their ass, and what do? They try to destroy him. That's sweet. Yes, there will be a buildup in their engines when they go to warp. They're gonna explode.
Spoilers.
Massive. That's just messed up. So anyway, so
there's so many things messed up with that episode. That's just one of them.
Hey, hold on. Let me go to my list.
No. So this is a great episode. What? Nothing bad will be said about that episode.
What's the
if
name?
If we're talking about the next, why didn't
they fall through the ship then?
Yeah,
that doesn't matter.
Hold on.
That's not integral to the plot.
Is that called the next phase?
The next phase with Roe and Geordi becoming ghosts.
Do
right?
you want it, Colin?
Yeah, go
it's
on.
Season
when is it?
5, isn't it?
It's season 5. It's episode 24. If we keep our schedule, it's in January of 2017.
Yeah, put me down for that because that episode is hysterical.
You got it. So yeah, this is ought to be funny for us. Yeah. So, as I said in a very smart-ass way, Picard is going to escort the Romulan to the neutral zone, but they go in separate directions.
Yeah, that made me laugh.
He's just turning the ship around.
You know, helm, hello, helm, yeah. In the wrong way. Yeah. Wesley, turn
Wesley,
around.
You saved the day, but you're screwing up. Or yeah. Maybe Wesley is gone. Or maybe they just Wesley sent another Class 3 probe with them.
No, he's in 10 forward, his mom's celebrating another death.
Okay, so anyway, guys, we have to wrap up unless you have anything more.
No, I think we covered it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, then, I think it's time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1, 2, 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. I do like the poker game in the end. I thought it was pretty good. The drama built up was nice. The teaser was excellent. And I like LaForge. I'm sorry Colin doesn't. Maybe someday we'll find out why Colin doesn't, but I do like LaForge.
Just don't.
Well, yeah, you told a little bit, but... And besides, that was, 40 minutes ago? I don't remember.
Yeah, that's true.
I like the fact that LaForge and the Romulan end up working together. So this was a LaForge show. LaVar, you did great. I'd like to see more LaVar Center of Attention episodes, and we'll get a few here and there. Even one with Ro, like you said. Who's Ro? Well, we'll find out later. It's not the best, but it's not the worst. But I like it a little bit more than the middle of the road. But yet, I'm not exactly sure it's quite a 4. So I'm going to go a 3.75. Colin, what about you?
Oh, that's going to throw the doc's head. That is 3.7.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I do like this episode. I think there's some great character moments. We learn a lot about Worf in this. We also see a different side to Geordi compared to the side that we have been seeing up till now. We also get to find out a bit more about the Romulans. We know Picard's a consummate diplomat and also a very good tactician, the way he thinks. So we get to see that in this episode as well. You know, there's bits in this in this episode that play out in later episodes as well. So there's nice leadings to other stuff. It's great seeing Tomalak. I think Tomalak is a brilliant character. And it's also nice to see that it's not... I mean, there's no staff meetings, so that's a first.
Yeah.
But it's also nice to see it's all too often there's a plot device or something where everything works out just fine. And there's a lot left in the air in this one. And I like that aspect as well. So I would give this a 4.
Okay. 4 it is. Doctor?
Okay. I mean, I think I've said a lot during this episode and I probably don't want to repeat myself. I kind of echo a lot of the stuff that's been mentioned by you two already. I like this episode. I think it's good. It's, you know, it's not an outstanding episode, but I think that episodes like this become kind of the norm in season 3. I mean, they're kind of really solid, very, very good episodes. And I think this is one of the ones where I would say it's a it's a kind of like a middle of the road episode where you can clearly see that the show's got much, much better, because this isn't a, you know, this isn't a season finale, this isn't a two-parter, this isn't a big episode per se, but it is, I think it's very well written and it's very well executed. As I was mentioning, I love, you know, I love the Worf angle in this, and I think that that adds a lot of, you know, it adds a maturity and a complexity to the story that I think in earlier seasons you would have just, you know, ignored, or perhaps made too much of it and then ruined it that way. Because, you know, this is something that you go to get a bit of character development, but you don't dwell on, and you don't really, it doesn't become the moral of the week, a Klingon having to learn and to appreciate human values and how he's wrong. Anyway, so I'm rambling still. The only downside that I have on this episode, to which I am going to knock off 0.297 of a point, is that I don't like that we don't find out what the Romulans are up to. And it's not that I need to be told what they're up to per se, I just don't think the writers cared what they were up to, in a way. So had it been something that it's mysterious that maybe pays off later, or even had it been something that it's better for us not to know that they're up to, I would have been happy with this. But I actually think in this case they just didn't, you know, they didn't think it was necessary for it to, you know, to all fit together, or for us to know as much as we probably would have liked. So I think it would have been a stronger story had we known a little bit more what they were up to. It's certainly, as we see Tomalak more and more in the coming, in the coming year, certainly. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, after which he disappears, which is very, very frustrating. Anywho, so a rambly way to say that this is a 4 out of 5 from me.
4 out of 5. Okay. So far, I'm up to a 3.54. James, you're up to a 3.71, but our guest is still killing us at a 4.68. Is that true? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, no, wait, no, make that a 3.74. So the guests are still beating us. They like Star Trek better, just like the previous two seasons.
They should start their own podcast.
Yeah, right. Yeah, everybody. Yeah, we'll come on your show. All right. And I just looked, and the guy who plays Tomalak, like you said, Andreas Katsalos, he actually comes back on Enterprise and plays the Vizian captain. That's the one where Tucker interferes with the cogenitor, the third gender.
Oh, yeah.
She ends up killing herself, I believe.
She ends up killing herself, yeah.
Yeah, so he plays the Vizian captain.
I think he's a great guy, by the way. I think his performances are pretty good. I also like the fact that they managed to get him back for the final of the series in All Good Things as well.
Right.
That's always been a kind of a highlight for me. I believe he recently passed. I think he died only a couple of years ago.
2006. Yeah.
And unfortunately, this is, it becomes more and more likely to happen and likely to, for us to stumble into this stuff, which is a little sad, but. Hey, I mean, I really enjoyed his work this week, certainly, and it's, and we have more to look forward to from.
And he's brilliant in Babylon 5.
Oh yeah, that's right. He is on.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really, the close-ups of him on the view screen. They made him up almost perfect, except for the bull haircut. It was a little misshaped, but that's okay.
Well, so we say thanks for Colin for popping by. For a while, we didn't. We were a little worried we weren't going to get you this week. So it's a big surprise that we managed to, everything was squared in time. So thanks, Colin, for popping by once again. And we look forward to you coming back again.
Hey, real quick. I'm detecting something, Colin, in your tweets lately.
What are you detecting?
It sounds like you kind of regret getting out of podcasting. Is there something that maybe we might look forward to?
Well, I've had to get out of podcasting temporarily for medical reasons. But if that gets sorted, then yeah, I might get back into it. Mm. I mean, I do a Battlestar Galactica one, but that's monthly.
Trek News and Views, The Next Generation, that'd been funny.
Yeah, that's. I actually put that out, and I had quite a few emails, messages, and it went a bit nuts. I only put it out as a general statement, And I had about, I had 42 messages, counting emails from people who suddenly says, yeah, yeah, bring it back, bring it back, bring it back. So we'll see.
All right. That's pretty good, because I noticed that when I forgot to post a show, I think it was Chris, it was Kieran McDuff who noticed that it was missing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing Tin Man with Kieran.
Yes, yes, that's when you're on next, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I'm not going to do leotards with you next week.
My what? You're going to do what? To where?
Yeah, that's what happens. You get Crusher and Troy doing exercises in leotards next week, don't you?
I don't know, but that to me was kind of a turn on. But hey, we'll talk about that tomorrow. I mean, those are pretty skin tight.
Yeah.
But, okay.
But that's for next week.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation. Passion fires up the Enterprise when Consulate Troy meets a mysterious diplomat.
When I first saw you, I felt as if I'd been waiting for you.
But he's hiding special powers that could destroy critical negotiations.
You're reading their emotional states and then using that to manipulate them.
On Star Trek The Next Generation.
Okay, well, join us again next week as we review episode 8 of season 3, which is The Price. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And I'm James from London.
I'm Colin from England.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Take care and good night, all.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, and as we stated, as I stated, and James, you might not even know I did this, I actually put an addendum into last week's show of Booby Trap, explaining why it was so late and the fact that we have actually forgotten to do the forums. And when Kieran, or I'll just call him Chris, when Chris was on, we really didn't have a lot of time for him. And I feel bad, because not only has he mentioned that in the forums, he's mentioned that in an email. So, Chris, I'm going to say it here. If you felt like we rushed you, we do apologize. We will not do it again. But it was kind of a... Yeah, the way that the scheduling worked out, it was just, I had to go. I had no choice. But anyway, so what we're going to do in this one for The Enemy is we're going to go ahead and catch up the first two forum feedbacks for Evolution and the Ensigns of Command. So we're going to start Evolution with, oh, hey, Kieran McDuff. And I just scrolled down to see how long it was. And I'll have to scroll back up. So... What?
And you have three monitors stacked on top of each other here, right?
Actually, yeah, I do have three monitors, but they're not stacked. They're side by side. And I got a fourth one that died up not too long ago. So actually, I did have four monitors here. When you're addicted to porn. Oh, I'm kidding. So, what has two thumbs and loves this episode? Bob Kelso. Doc, you want to explain that? Because I have no idea what he's talking about.
Oh, no, I have no idea. I thought it was there's a reference to Scrubs, so it must be something to do with Scrubs. And if you want, I'll Google straight away. But
I am Bob Kelso.
I assume that the guy that played the mad scientist, or not so mad scientist, you know, Wesley Senior. I assume he was in Scrubs.
Yeah,
that's what my deductive senses are telling me.
Yes, not only that, looking at his face, he kind of looks like Dr. Stubbs. I don't know Scrubs, to be honest, so it's going to go past me. Oh, and he even says, sorry for all this, episode predates Scrubs by many years, and I can't help but think of him in that series. See, I guess, Kieran, you know, you're going to have to do a forum feedback for the forum feedback and tell me why. What has two thumbs and loves this episode? You have to tell me why. Anyway, yay season 3. This is where things get good. I think I'm not so sure about this episode. I didn't think it was paced all that well, and they pretty much skip over the whole, hey, look, Dr. Crusher has given up her cushy number at Starfleet Medical and returned to the Enterprise. You're right, that was so glazed over. She should have explained why. It wouldn't have been nice to have some resolution of Dr. Pulaski as well, and not falling down a turbo shaft kind of way. So I guess he doesn't like our throwing the good doctor down the turbo shaft. So here's my guess to what transpired. Sit back, y'all. I reckon. I'm keeping that in. I wrecked him. I reckon Dr. Crusher was visiting the Enterprise to see Wesley because he never writes and she wanted to see him. But of course, he's being the awkward teenager who doesn't want anything to do with his mommy. He says mother. So he keeps himself busy with his studies and his latest pet project. So while he's doing that, Dr. Crusher got roped into a weekly game of poker instead. The game escalates into strip poker. The game escalates quickly as the two doctors butt heads, and eventually they raise the stakes to the point she offers up the cushy number at Starfleet Medical. Pulaski has a winning hand, so she gets a cushy number. Why does he keep saying cushy number? Is that a...
Do you not have that expression?
No, I have no idea.
Okay, so when if you were to have a... So if you have a job that is generally an easy job or a job that is easy relative to the effort that you put in and you get rewarded more than you actually deserve, you would often refer to that as just like, you know, it would be a cushy job, and you'd easily refer to it as a cushy number as well. It's just a bit of a, you know, an easy job.
Okay. Well then, I guess Pulaski gets the cushy job, while Crusher has to return to the Enterprise. A bet's a bet, after all. Somehow I think the higher-ups might have a problem with that, but that's probably a rule of acquisition. That would be a good rule of acquisition. Anyway, since they shouldn't really be gambling like that, Picard gets involved, and everyone agrees to never speak of the gambling incident again, as long as Dr. Crusher stays on board and agrees to have tea with Picard occasionally. Why? Because Jean-Luc is playing the long game, that's why. Meanwhile, in the senior staff, Geordi gets bumped up in rank twice in 2 years. I wonder if they made him walk the plank. That's a good question, if like they did Lieutenant Commander Worf, as Worf did in Generations. Actually, on that note, do we know what the difference between Lieutenant and Lieutenant Junior Grade is? I've always wondered that. I thought before Doc tells me what it is, I thought it might be time spent in rank thing. If you've been a lieutenant junior grade for ages, let's bump you up. But it can't be, otherwise Worf wouldn't have taken 2 years to get promoted to full lieutenant when it only took Geordi one. So do you think there's a difference?
Oh, I mean, there is a difference. I assume it's just, you know, an extra 5 days holiday a year and maybe, you know, a couple more replicator rations. I was just, you know, what the actual definition is, of course, you never know, but, you know, do well at your job, get a good appraisal by Riker, and he probably has a certain number of those, you know, certain number of those gold pips to hand out in exchange for a black one. So, it's just one of those things. It's just a title, right?
Yeah, well, I suppose. But I guess the lieutenants get to order the junior lieutenants around.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Although, you know, something tangent again, when Nog goes into the academy, O'Brien even says, once he graduates, I'm going to have to call him sir. But no, I don't think that ever came out. Because Nog continued to call O'Brien sir when he came back from the academy.
As he should.
Yeah. So... anyway, but maybe Worf ate his appraisal. Could you explain that one?
What do you mean? You mean appraisal or ate?
Yeah, ate his appraisal. So you think, you know, Riker wrote him a performance review and Worf ate it?
Yeah. Or lost it or whatever it happened to be.
Okay.
Or didn't, you know, didn't. You know, every year you get the opportunity to put together a promotion form, and Worf was probably too busy in the holodeck, you know, fighting Skeletor or whatever he gets up to.
So Riker gave him his appraisal. He didn't take it down to the ship's library to get it put into record because he lost it or ate it.
That's pretty much the direction we're headed in, yeah.
Moron. Worf, Kieran. Worf. Anyway, back to the episode and specifically back to our guest. I think Dr. Kelso... Dr. Scrubs, the only one on the Enterprise because this was his life's work. I think I asked, why wasn't there a team? Although everyone would be working for him in his team, he still has his team and therefore his prerogative to take the egg with them and oversee the first the experiment firsthand. We already know that Starfleet do work with the scientists a lot for these kinds of things. Ask Dr. Carol Marcus, for instance. But they don't always send a scientist on the ship. There wasn't anyone on the Reliant from Regular One, after all. But in this case, Dr. Stubbs would definitely want to be there when everything happened. I'm sure the rest of the team would love to be there as well, I'd imagine, but the Enterprise wasn't going to take them all. Actually, the Enterprise probably could have taken a few of them, so I'll guess that the team were sick. As Dr. Stubbs and his obsession, they were all too glad to stay back and get the data later. I think my favorite... What's a U in favorite for?
That's how you spell favorite. Favorite has a U in it.
I thought it was F-A-V-O-R-I-T-E. Oh,
nope.
Then again, I'm a bad spiller anyway.
No. So, just so I'm clear, in U.S. English, it doesn't have a U, but in English, or what might be described as proper English, favor has a U, color has a U, honor has a U. We have superfluous U's.
Okay. Well then, his favorite with the U bit of this episode was when everything finally works and Dr. Stubbs gets so engrossed in the data that's coming in that he completely ignores everyone else on the bridge. I actually think he was one of the better visiting characters on Star Trek. I agree, I like Dr. Stubbs. The whole baseball thing was fun. I could believe his obsession and the frustration at the problems threatening to ruin that obsession, and even his reaction to the nanites. He won't be the last scientist in Star Trek to think something has just been created, couldn't possibly be a sentient being. He's not even the first. Maybe I like Dr. Stubbs because I can relate to him. Although I'd hope I wouldn't have been as hasty as when it comes to shooting nanites, maybe I'd have taken an interest in them. Maybe Dr. Stubbs takes an interest in them later on, and that's why he goes out to bat for them by securing them a planet. Only a passing interest, of course. He's got so much of his own data and research to analyze now. Yeah, he probably did that because if the nanites ever have a chance to save his life, they won't. Other thoughts I had, that was my tangent, by the way. Other thoughts I had listening this week. His line about turning off Troy was pretty good, and I liked the discussion about whether it was possible to stop probing with empathy and telepathy. I tend to agree with Lou that they can't turn off these instincts, but we do know that they're trained to drown out the noise. We actually come to this later in the season in Tin Man when Tam Elbrun can't, and he's basically driven mad by it. Good episode, by the way. I'm going to take issue with Dr. Roberts. Oh, do you want to read that?
Yeah, sure. Well, this was a complete slip of the tongue. What follows, I completely agree with it. That I was trying to say the exact opposite of what I clearly must have ended up saying. But I'm going to take issue with Dr. Roberts this week, though. Baseball is a slow version of cricket? No chance. No, I understand that. I was trying to say it's a fast version of cricket.
Oh, okay.
Cricket is far slower. Even 2020 cricket takes longer than a game of baseball, to say nothing of a five-day test. Now, actually, let me just stop there for a second. By the way, Lou, a game of cricket is usually played over 5 days.
Really?
So there'll be five full days worth of sport. And then the thing that often goes around, one of the signs that like Americans don't quite understand cricket or these type of games is that we can play for 5 days and it ends in a draw. it's very common for people to play for 5 days and it to end in a draw. So that's just something to know about.
Wow.
Okay. Yes, 5 days worth of standing around in a field, occasionally hitting a ball. No wonder the spectators just turn up and drink all day.
Mm.
It's always made me laugh how England and Australia play for a full 25 days to win and win the smallest prize of all in sport, the Ashes. And by the way, that is a trophy that is given out to the winner of a... So, you know, every now and again, you obviously have, you know, things like the Football World Cup and the Stanley Cup and all these, like, you know, big glamorous prizes in sport. Well, in cricket, one of the, well, actually might be considered, you know, the big highest prize in cricket is something known as the Ashes, and that goes to the winner of a match between the England and Australia. And that's it. There are no other people in the competition. We play Australia. I think we alternate whether or not we play it in England or whether or not we play it in Australia. And when you win, you win a little urn, a little kind of cup thing that is, it can't be more than like 3 inches high, which is what Kieran is talking about here.
Okay.
By the way, having said all this, I'm not into cricket. Let's not get too much into cricket. There can't be a time spent playing per inch of a trophy ratio higher anywhere in the sporting world than that, which I actually have to agree with. I would agree that rounders is definitely closer to baseball than cricket is. Now, by the way, rounders, do you guys play rounders?
Never heard of it.
Okay, rounders is basically softball.
Oh, okay, child. Yeah, he says a child's version of baseball. So, yeah, it would be softball.
Yeah. But compared to some other favorite American sports, I find baseball to be quite nicely paced. American football is probably faster when in play, but it's so broken up I lose interest very quickly. Baseball has breaks too, but they feel like breaks in the play. American football feels like play is a break in the adverts.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Baseball has no time limit, and football is rigidly timed.
The William Shatner book that Colin referred to was The Return, and he's correct in that he, or Mike Lee, the Reef Stevens, suggested that Borg once had met Vija. It's an interesting premise, but I'm not sure how it quite fits in. My major problem with that would be the case when the Borg would already know where the creator of Vija was based, and then would have come to Earth a lot sooner themselves. As it is, canon suggests the Borg only found out about humans when they encountered the Enterprise-D in Q-Who. They will be coming. Now, let me just start on that tangent here. So there are two theories that I hear about with the Borg. One is that we happen to be put in front of the Borg ship in Q-Who, and that's when they first knew about us, and then that's when they started. And the other theory is that if you actually look at the entirety of the Borg stories, you have a bit of a time arc where the guys from First Contact who come to get us end up in the past. Then obviously Archer's ship ends up meeting them, and there's this bit right at the end of that episode where they send off a signal into space. And I thought what they're trying to go for here is that the Borg from the 22nd century sent a message from Earth, and that meant that at a certain point in the future, possibly the ship that Q made us run into was on its way to Earth already. And basically all that Q was doing in Q-Who was giving us a heads up. But then, obviously, you're into this predestination paradox, as the guys from Temporal Investigations always like to tell you, which is that, you know, these guys couldn't have been coming, because the only reason why they'd be coming is that they would have got here in order to be fought off at Earth and then sent in the past in order to call us back again.
Right.
So I don't know where that goes.
Yeah, well, see, the problem is in Q-Who, they weren't interested in the people, only its technology. It's, you know, they've identified it as something they could consume. Well, that makes absolutely no sense that they were assimilating the Hansons, and they were assimilating, like you say, in 22nd century. And they got a partial signal out. So yeah, you're right. I think that's a good point. That's probably where it happened. So they were like, who are these humans? Let's investigate. Let's go get them. And that's when, you know, Q pushed the meeting a little early, which is, you know, like they say, it's a good thing he did.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, tangents galore this week, and indeed tangents galore during this feedback section. I like the elements of this story, but there's just something a bit off about the whole thing. I think the pacing isn't great, and I can't quite put my finger on why. I like Dr. Stubbs. I like the idea of the nanites working together and evolving because of that. But this isn't one of those episodes I would choose to go and watch. I always feel like it should be better than it is, but even solid 3 out of 5. So maybe I'm looking for too much. Mm. And I replied to Kieran on that, just again, offering my apologies for having my slip of the tongue in terms of cricket, because anyone has ever seen any cricket anywhere ever would never call it a fast version of anything. A fast version of maybe like death, perhaps. But death of boredom.
Well, I mean, what about soccer? Or as you call it, football?
Football. Football's fine. Football's 90 minutes long. With, you know, cricket, like 40 hours.
Yeah, but you've never killed anyone on the soccer field like Worf has.
Oh, no. No. That's,
I think that's something we'll get into another day. Okay, so let's end it with Medic 1849 Blair saying, thanks for the UP shout-out, guys. Just listening to Evolution now. Great to be starting Season 3 of TNG. Hey, I love to do the shout-out about UP, too. The only thing I would say, guys, if you could give this some consideration, and I know Melissa listens to this. I know Blair listens to this. So eventually you'll get this message. It's kind of like when Apollo 13 did a tape dump and, by the way, it hurts when I urinate. Well, you know, we don't want that going out over the air, but we'll put it in a tape dump. But the thing is that when it comes to forum feedback, we do all feedback. And the reason why I say that is I've noticed a couple times I've put some feedback and it didn't get out on the show. I think everybody deserves to be heard. But that, don't take that as a criticism or a complaint, you guys. You still have a wonderful show. And I still think everyone would do themselves good by listening to Upper Pylon 2. And that is, of course, until we get our show, which I will not name because I think it's awesome.
You're talking about Lower Pylon 3, right?
Yeah. They'll always be above us, okay? They're always going to be above us in skill for podcasting. So, yeah, we'll be Lower Pylon 3. We'll be the one that gets destroyed when Sisko and Kira come back from an alien conference on something, on earring placements or something of that nature. So... But okay, that was Evolution. So now let's go into the Ensigns of Command. Who starts us on that one? Data Logan says, you guys seem surprised that Ardrian had even heard of positronic brains, even though Data was an invented when the colony lost contact with the Federation. But positronic brains were actually, quote, thought of, end quote, by Isaac Asimov back in 1939. Certainly it would have been fine that any Federation citizen, even far back as when this colony lost contact with the Federation, could have heard about positronic brains, but just not know that they could actually work. Is that true?
No, I think what he says is kind of factually and historically true, but it's not... I don't think the surprise is necessary that, you know, hey, did this person... Did they read Asimov, or maybe also more fully, didn't these dudes watch Star Trek in the 60s? But it's the idea of within the universe of Star Trek, you know, positronic isn't really, when they refer to it, it's clear that they're not referring to it in the sense of the literal sense of the word, but it's more of a, this is a certain amount of like standardized technology that is in play that solves certain issues around artificial intelligence or artificial life.
Okay.
So, I think he's perfectly reasonable to call us up on this, but I think the in-universe or the in-Star Trek universe definition of positronic net is somewhat different from what kind of goes out in the literary world in the real world.
Yeah, I thought that was something that soon, you know, thought of.
And in the same way that things like neutrinos and tachyons and stuff. I mean, certainly tachyons, not necessarily neutrinos, but when you're talking in the Trekkie world, they don't really mean tachyons in the sense of what they actually are, like physically in the outside world.
Okay.
So I always think it's, yeah, so he's perfectly, he should be calling us out on this, but, and he's true.
That's fine. I didn't know. So thank you. I mean, it's sure. It's a lesson to be learned. Actually, a whole idea of an android brain is, okay, Actually, the whole idea that an android brain is positronic based on a small positively charged particle versus electronic based on a small negatively charged particle really is ridiculous. A funny word that has no real special meaning. If you could get any electronic brain to work, it's pretty easy to think you just reverse the charges to get a positronic brain to work. The difficult part is getting the brain to work, not in what charged particle you use. Now that needs explaining. I don't get it.
Okay, the charged particle fundamentally is just the messenger. And I think I think a lot of the stuff when you talk about positronic versus electronic, what he's just really saying there is that you're using a different messenger to send around the information. Now, frankly, the choice of messenger has very little to do with everything else. So if you were to introduce a programming that was sophisticated enough to kind of, to become conscious and have like an inherent property of sentience, I think that is on a different scale to as to what you use as the messenger to get around this information.
Okay. So
I think that's probably where he's going on that.
I see. Okay. Well, he goes on to say, as they might say on Galaxy Quest, minor, not minor. Septimus Minor means the lesser minor, not the one that mines for stuff in Septimus. So maybe the writer is actually thinking small nose versus nose picker. I guess that's better than big nose. Sept could also relate to the root meaning seven. Maybe the name means small seven. I'll take nose picker. You guys remember the TOS episode, the Galileo 7?
Never seen it.
Never heard of it before.
Come on, that'd be ridiculous. Of course I have.
Oh, the remastered one is awesome as the shuttle is orbiting the planet before it almost goes down. But anyway, where was I? When Spock is given his real first chance to command a team of his own and learn something about being in command, well, maybe the writer considered this a minor Galileo 7 episode, an homage to the original Galileo 7. Only in this one is that Data is learning about being in a command situation. I've always thought the writer's use of the term corporate relating to the aliens was a reference to their very anal lawyer-like minds and how they detailed how they like the detailed treaty. Maybe a reference to how large corporations use lawyers and or have complicated legalized documents. Of course, in universe, corporate is just another word for cooperative or corporative. I wonder if he really means cooperative. He spells it corporative, and I don't think that's a real word. A government in itself organized as a corporate entity, I suppose so. And obviously people like his responses. They've given him plus 8 as well as Kieran's.
Yeah, for some reason, Kieran's is a lot longer than Data's. Mm. But,
That's okay, weird. That never happens.
First, I'll say that I quite like the forum feedback at the end. It doesn't break the flow. That's good. So at least we've got one vote in one direction. And I think we're not... Well, considering we haven't done forum feedback for a while, I think it's here to stay either at the end or to have been forgotten about. Okay, in the previous seasons, you've started, had to stop to go, and then do the feedback, and then get going again. This way, you wouldn't need to take the break, and you can look back later on when you're actually done with the episode. This worked well for other podcasts on TrekMate too, actually. Mm. I'll probably put the Picard flute at the end of the feedback section, though, rather than at the end of the review section, so people don't turn off.
What do you think?
I will yield to the listeners.
Well,
I don't have an opinion.
It makes sense. I mean, it feels like, what if people hear the flute and say, okay, well, they're done, goodbye, and miss the forum? Like, I put it on the end just in case they don't want to do the forum. But if they do want to do the forum, it gives them the false impression that we're over. So,
but we should have two outros, right? One outro and then one outro afterwards.
Either that or just remind everybody before we go on to the end, don't forget to stick around for the forums. I'm Lou from Nebraska. So that's an idea, but...
Okay, the Shediac Corporate didn't make sense to me, although reading Data Logan's feedback now makes me think of the Vogons in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, in which case maybe it does make a bit of sense. Although the word, in this case, cooperative would have been better. But then again, the Shediac don't strike me as being too cooperative with other species. I never thought of the Septimus Minor angle. I should have. It's not like I know what... It's not like I don't know the word septum. Again, Data Logan is technically correct, but I think the writers may have gone with the play on words angle and actually did think the nose picking. One that Data Logan will likely know better than me is around the idea of the Enterprise landing. I agree that the whole ship can't, but I seem to remember there had been a debate over whether or not the saucer section could when it has separated. Of course, we found out that whether it could or not, it didn't land in Generations.
No.
Podcast discussion aside, this episode has never really held any interest for me. There's never a good explanation as to why these colonists aren't dead from the radiation. It's just swept away. Come on, the Paradise Syndrome in TOS at least did that much. I think there are very strong similarities between them, but I think, in this case, the original series episode was a lot better. Having said that, why are we worrying about moving these colonies? Colonists, you've asked them to move on. They've made it clear that they're going to... You've made it clear that they're going to be killed if they don't. Leave them there and then... Leave them there then.
Mm-hmm.
The Federation does this too often for my liking. Bigger picture politics, moving people who don't want to be moved. Why is that? That's not only allowed, but actually accepted. If they wanted to stay, that's their prerogative. Let them stay. You've done your best. They'll fight and they'll die. Take whoever doesn't want to die with you and move on. Picard eventually gets to this with the Native American colony in Season 7, but even that was against his original orders. Having said that, Data does a great job of driving home the point about them almost certainly being killed. He's one android with a phaser, not a Shellyak army armed with lots. A point proven, and suddenly they're all willing to leave. Actually, did they want to leave? They never made that clear. In fact, they never made anything clear.
Actually, that's the I'm sorry to interrupt you, but actually, I thought they did. I think Gojovin just saw a rise. The people just, you know, once Leator or Leor or whatever his name was, once he said, there are other places, other challenges, everybody just went with Leator or... And Gojovin pretty much had no choice at that point.
I mean, there was a certain amount of mob mentality going on this planet.
Yeah.
That meant that, you know, everyone was one side and then everyone flipped. They seemed very easy to be led.
You never know. I mean, we don't know. He may have joined his grandfather up on that mountain someday.
In fact, they never made anything clear, and that's my major problem with this episode.
Yeah.
Who's piloting the evacuation shuttles? I hadn't thought of that until you brought it up, but you're absolutely right. But no, that's never answered. Did the Shediac just accept Picard's solution and move on? Probably. They seemed like they were quite set on following that to the letter. But then you never hear from the Shediac ever again, so who knows? I'd like to see them turn up again as a threat. And then there's the transporter story. 15 years to fix the problem? Okay, did Geordi transmit whatever they found back to Starfleet Academy to get them working on it? It seems like it would probably be worthwhile after all. But no, we don't get to know that either. This episode is full of unfinished plot lines, half-baked ideas, and probably the most boring planet of colonists in the galaxy. Honestly, I couldn't relate to any of them. Maybe that's why I'm quite happy to sacrifice them, actually. They wouldn't be any loss. Gojovin at least had a backstory with his grandfather doing so much for the colony, but the rest were virtually non-entities. Adrienne was attractive as a woman as she was pretty wooden.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't convey any feelings, and her falling for Data just seemed forced in both acting and writing. I'd agree with James that it wasn't actually necessary either.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, by the way, I hope I'm not coming across as someone who wants to snub out all romance that is ever in any plot, because I think that comes up a lot. I always say, well, you don't need this relationship. Move along. You know, move along. Why would you want to have any relationship between two people? So I hope I'm not getting a reputation for being a Eastern romantic.
In this case, I have no feelings for my computer, I can assure you that. And nor will I ever have feelings for my computer. It just, that was just crazy. That was forced.
Overall, I'm giving this episode a 2 out of 5. It would have been a 1 out of 5, but Picard's diplomacy, especially cutting off the Sheliak and making them sweat at the end, gives it a boost up to 2. I'd rather have seen much more of that side of the story than anything else. And the rest just seems like it's thrown together with more questions than it answers.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. All right. One thing I read in Kieran's forums is that he's not the type to start the podcast and then just give up halfway through. It looks like he listens to the end. So great, Kieran. Thank you. And okay, so thank you guys for the forum for Evolution and the Ensigns of Command. And next week when we do the price, we will complete the schedule for the survivors and who watches the watchers. So hang out for that. Thank you for downloading again. And good night, guys.